it might be more political. I'm not really sure. You know, people who are intentionally flouting it and being like, well, screw that. We're going to gather a big bunch of people. It's so intentional. It's not like, oh, we're not good at it. It's like we're just mad that this is the rules and we're going to, you know, try to upset the cart or whatever. But, you know, for me, it's a constant battle in my mind. You know, is it even, are you doing society any good, your village, your community, your family, any good by being open?
Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat, drink, and wear masks because it's a pandemic, people. I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at On Milwaukee, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, the queen of cuisine, the denizen of drinking, the royalty of spring rolls. I don't know. I've ran out of alliterations here. I came fully ill-prepared, Lori.
No worries.
That's Lori Frederick. That's Lori Frederick, dining writer at onmilwaukee.com. How are you doing today, Lori?
Good, good. That's really all people need to know, right?
Just yeah, every time I try to come up with fun names, and I just end up spinning myself into circles like a dog chasing its tail.
You do a good job, Matt.
Learn from me, everyone. Never be ambitious. Never try harder.
Not true. So, I'm good. How are you today?
Not too bad. We're recording on a day. I felt like last week the weather was perfect in terms of summer weather. It was like 70 degrees, outstanding, like 70, 80 degrees, nice breeze. And then the summer was like, oh, I'm sorry. Are you enjoying this? I'm turning off the air conditioning.
Yeah.
So now it's like 85.
Oh, wait. It's summer again. Yeah.
Yeah. August came in hot again, literally. But I imagine warm weather and sunny weather is good news for people like our guest today. Lori, would you like to introduce
him? Yes. People who own bars and restaurants want the nice weather, the sunny weather to go on as long as possible.
I mean, I've been talking, my family and I, we've been having these conversations about, you know, Packer season coming up, and it's just like, what are bars and restaurants going to do? And conveniently enough, we have someone here who may answer some of those and be able to answer some of those questions.
We're actually here. We're going to talk with Nat Devour.
Sure.
Devour. Seems like a question to have asked off mic, Lori.
Yeah, actually.
Podcast we got here.
I will say it's a made up name, so no sweat, because it's new for me. It's a combination of me and my wife's name. So I only started saying it after we were married. That's not my original last name.
That's really interesting. Why did you land on that decision, if I can ask?
Well, it was the 90s and everybody was being progressive. But, you know, in sort of a show of equality, and it was hard to imagine taking another person's name, the concept of that. And I definitely understand how that was a challenge. And, you know, why don't I take the woman's name? That would equally be a challenge for me. So we said, we'll just combine them into one name, which I remember my high school principal did in the 80s. And, you know, I always thought that was pretty cool. So we did it and announced it at the wedding after, you know, the minister, you know, said, I now present. And it was interesting, you know. The crowd was like, well, what? The what now? I think everybody thought it was a joke and then had to get used to the idea that it's like, I guess you can change your name. Of course, most of the women were like, oh, man, awesome, rock on. And a lot of the guys and dads were like, what have you done?
Well, I always wondered about that because, I mean, obviously there's the hyphenating name option. But I've always wondered, like, if everyone starts hyphenating their names, what's going to happen, like, in the next generation where people are going to have, like, four last names and everyone's going to sound like some weird royalty situation where it's going to be
the exact same thing. Yeah, it doesn't take a genius to realize hyphenation lasts about one generation. And then you need to start removing them, you know, to get back to something reasonable. But, you know, I figured there's just enough technology out there with all this stuff written down that the purpose of, you know, maintaining the lineage is you go to ancestry.com now or something, it doesn't really matter that you carry on your great-great-great-grandpa's name.
Yeah, yeah, there's a little bit less of an... It's not like back in the old days where it was like, oh man, like we have this one scrapbook and that's all that remains right. of the Miller
and of course,
family lineage.
The women simply don't exist in that history, so right. even that doesn't really make sense. Yeah, so anyway, we could have combined it two different ways, and you know, the first one was Civita. That was the opposite Ooh. Combination, mm-hmm. and Devour, mm-hmm. you know, was the flip side. And I thought that was a little too intense, so I was actually against that one and for the other one. But my wife preferred that one because it's a little more like in your face. So I've always, you know, now I'm used to it, but it is kind of like, yeah, Devour. I guess you can. And people are like, oh, do you capitalize the V? I'm like, oh, sure, why not? That sounds kind of like exotic.
There you go.
Well, and it fits because you got into the service, the food and beverage industry. So, yeah. I mean, Devour.
It's just completely made up. So, frankly, it doesn't matter how you use it. There might not be another Devour on Earth. So.
I actually found out once that there is another Matt Miller spelled the exact same way, who is a film critic as well. And so I really had a real existential crisis to be like, I am the second best me in the universe. Like the other Matt Miller is doing far better things and far greater things in the world. And I'm like, I need to change my name.
I went to school with a Matt Miller and I'll guarantee you, he's doing worse.
Okay.
I don't think I've spoken to him. That might not be fair, but I'm from a very small town where, you know, I was lucky to make it out alive, and I'm not going to assume Matt Miller has gone on to bigger and better things there. So,
okay,
you're way ahead of him.
I'll have to like make like a rankings of like best Matt Miller, top 10 Matt Millers in the world.
There you go. Well, there are probably a few because your name is, you know,
it's a very common,
common
name now, which is
common,
it's no so. Fun.
But let me redo this introduction because
okay,
I think it's important that we tell people where Nat is from. So this is Nat Devour from Draft and Vessel, which is the coziest little craft beer bar that you can
really great.
Desire in Shorewood. And Nat, how long has Draft and Vessel been around? You guys?
We're coming up on our sixth anniversary. I feel like we just had our fifth, but I feel like the last 9 months don't exist. So I still feel like it's five, but it actually is almost a year now. So it really is closer to six. And, you know, some days it depends on the day. It feels brand new, like it literally just kind of started. And then other days, it feels like forever. And I can't remember a time before that. And it's weird how it flips back and forth depending on your mood.
Yeah, this year I'm sure is really just muddled up the time and being able to be like, what year is it? How long? What day is it? Where am I right now?
Yeah, that kind of sums it up. I think like many events like this, it's going to make a little more sense in hindsight. You're going to be able to look back and be like, really understand 2020 maybe. You know, you're kind of in it right now and you're not even sure what everything means and why things are happening, but there's reasons. And I think as time goes on, we'll look back and like, oh man, 2020, and probably some movies people make about 2020 starring who knows who, and we'll watch them and be like, oh yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, we'll listen to the music that came out in 2020 and we'll be like, oh, this song again.
All the photos of masks, like every photo that has a mask and you're like, oh, it's so 2020.
Yeah, everyone was joking that at the Sundance Film Festival next year, there's just going to be all these movies about the pandemic and about quarantine coming out, and everyone's going to be like, no, we can only have one.
Like, well, there always is a lag, you know, like same after September 11th, and I remember being a kid and Vietnam movies were sort of the thing. There has to be that window where you let it rest for a while.
Yeah.
And then that first person who makes a movie about it, everyone's like, oh, what? You're making a movie about that?
Yes.
And then it's over and then you can make movies and it's fine.
I had a good friend, for a positive spin on this, I had a good friend who said that he's been taking long walks on a regular basis. He called them his pandemic walks. And kind of reflecting on the situation. He's like, I've come to the conclusion, you know, the only one that I can really live with is that this is a great time to really look at the opportunities, you know, that lie ahead. And maybe like as we come out of this, we'll all know better what really means something to us.
I'd like to think that people are going
what we can set aside and what we really want to do so that we can do that better.
I'd like the optimism there, but considering how people have handled this pandemic in parts of our country in particular, I have a really hard time believing people are going to take any valuable lessons away.
I'll tell you who is. Rick Steves, because I heard him on the radio this morning, and he said that exact thing. He's, you know, his business, he's a travel guy. I don't know if you know who he is, but, you know, European travel guy. His revenue this year is zero, because he runs a tour company, and he has done zero tours, and he sells guidebooks to Europe, and Americans aren't even allowed in Europe. So he has 100 employees, and he has zero revenue. And he literally said the best thing about this is that you get to slow down and think about like what really matters. And I don't think it's bad to slow down. You know, it's not like we need to go faster. And I was like, man, Rick Steves, that's like just the best spin on it. Being super positive, making zero money. Just, you know, another feather in his cap in my book.
For sure, If anyone would deserve to be resentful about what's going on, I mean, imagine a guy like that being like, "Well, I have this great company, and I can do nothing. I am utterly and completely handcuffed by this situation." Yeah. But I imagine I imagine a similar experience for you with being in the service industry, and especially for those months of and continued months right now of kind of this uncertainty. How have you been feeling through all of this?
Well, it's funny because right away when you mentioned, you know, kind of taking a step back or thinking about the big picture, the first thing we did, you know, was, again, we did take an opportunity to do things that needed to get done with no people in here. So right off the bat, it was like, you know, how do you make this a good thing? We refinished the bar, and then it was like, oh, it's going to be longer than a week. All right, well, then we're going to refinish the floors. And that was like a month-long process that never would have happened. Then it was, okay, get out the list of things that are supposed to be fixed. That's 5 years long, and they've never been fixed, and start making my way through these little things, you know, touching them up. Nobody notices them necessarily. You know, it's like a piece of molding missing here and there. But I notice them and they're on my list and I don't get around to dealing with them. So I spent a month solid or two just touching up all this stuff since we did expand. So, you know, when you ask how old are we, it's interesting because there's kind of two answers to that. You know, we opened in 2014 as this very, very, very small beer bar, unnaturally and illogically small. until we realized it wasn't even feasible or tenable to be that small as a bar. we just had to get a little bigger to accommodate a bathroom. And then that was 2016, and then we're kind of a little different thing. We're the bigger version. So the small version lasted 2 years, and only the people who were here then remember it. We do fondly as well, and often miss that sheer unnatural size. But then when we got bigger, you know, now it's been 4 years since, going on 4 years since then. So we've been bigger twice as long as we were smaller, even though in my mind, you know, that original tiny place how the idea began. And it's sort of grown a little bit. But the first thing we did was we sat down and like, or maybe me specifically, you know, how can I get stuff done? What I don't want to do is be like, oh, well, this sucks. All right, shut her down and sit on the couch until they let us open again. Or even, it's not even that we wanted to open. It's that we just kind of waited to see. And that's what we're still doing. We're kind of playing it by ear.
Yeah. You have to look at kind of every day or, you know, a week at a time and go, what can we, you know, what can we handle? You know, right now. Well, and the business of owning a bar, and this place, no matter what bar you own, like these are places, and for you especially, I think these are places where they were created, like they're gathering spaces and social places. You know, like you have a bar, it's not a sports bar, so you don't have televisions, people don't come to drink and watch sports. You don't have food, so people don't come to eat. People literally come to your bar to enjoy great craft beer and chat
conversation.
With one another. Yeah. I mean, and so this has to be a really interesting scenario for you, particularly because that is why people, you know, that's why people come, is to, you know, to chat with a guy down the block or, you know.
Yeah. We are on a better, I would say there's more not positive, just like we're lucky in so many ways. So if I try and find things to complain about, I still acknowledge every time I say that how many ways this could be worse for us. And a lot of it is because of this existing model has just worked in our favor during this compared to other places. But yeah, I mean, like when you say we're, and I had mentioned we opened very small and it's sort of on a whim. And you said, oh, you don't have TVs and people go to your bar for this other thing. And, you know, I take it as far as, you know, when we first opened, we don't even use the word bar. I try not to use the word bar. When people used the word bar, I would try to correct them because it was very much the anti-bar. Like it was designed to not be a bar. And there were things that were very intentionally, you know, counter to what you might expect. If I said bar and you walk in, you're going to have a preconception of what's going to be in this room. You know, there's going to be alcohol, likely going to be TVs. One of the main things you do in there is watch sports and meet people. And, you know, if it's your birthday or you want a party or whatever, there may be shots involved and things can get crazy at night. And maybe every now and then the cops are called and, like a lot of that is removed here by design to the point where bar doesn't necessarily describe it. Because again, it sort of sets something in your mind. You walk in and we don't want you to think that. So we call it like a beer room or a tasting room. Tap room, of course, usually goes with a brewery, even though that makes sense. But half the people who come in here think we brew beer. And basically every telemarketer who calls us thinks we're a brewery. You know, to the point where it's like, man, just read our, before you're going to try and sell us something, just go to the website, you know, you'll save yourself time than selling us brewery equipment. But it stems from my past and how I came to this is a very unusual and unlikely, and probably there are very few bar owners who came to own a bar in the way I did. But that just left me again with avoiding certain things you would expect. And strangely enough, all of those decisions have kind of been an asset in coronavirus bar ownership.
Yeah. Well, because and I think it's interesting. So, I mean, you came from the world of photography. And just to give people a little snippet on how non-traditional your opening was. And you were telling me just the other day, actually, that, you know, that space was originally, you know, you thought, oh, I'll put a photography studio here. And
yeah.
And so what was it that turned that into, you know, a beer tasting space, you know?
Yeah, it's so a couple things. You know, I've tried to decide that myself because, again, I use the word whim a lot because that does sum it up, you know, to some degree. It wasn't a business plan. It's not a life dream. It's not a long-form strategy or a someday I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. It was a combination of a few weird things paired with my personality of wanting to... it's not even take risks. It's just try new things and expand my horizons and travel within my own confines, whether, you know, that's physical or mental or geographic or whatever. You know, part of it was we came out of the recession and got this building on the cheap because we had lost our house in Whitefish Bay. So we were on both sides of that. We were losing on one end and then picking up where someone else was losing on this end. Right. And it was mostly an investment property with a lot of rentals, and that was the only way it worked. I was a photographer, but really the photography world was transitioning to online. You know, your galleries and studio was online. There was no purpose to carry the overhead of a brick and mortar.
Yeah.
And that was the goal, the plan, again. But in between the building, you know, we came here with a six-month-old. Now there are four kids. That stuff changes. You don't see how that's going to change you. You know, the photography landscape changes. You burn out on some things. Strangely enough, I was putting kids to bed a lot for years in the dark, little babies, you know, and you just have to kind of sit there in the dark. You can't make a noise. You can't even necessarily like look at your phone or anything. You're just sitting there. And I would stew about designing a cool business in this storefront in the front of the building where there was a barber here and he was looking to retire. And I would just think about what could be in there. And I thought gelato would be cool. All these different ideas. And then alongside of that, I stumbled into craft beer at the very first time with an accidental order of a Founder's Backwoods Bastard, which is a barrel-aged Scotch ale, dirty bastard. Ooh. And that beer was accidentally served to me by a waitress when the beer I ordered.
It's a great
accident. Yeah. So, like, I ordered a beer I thought was interesting, Smithwick's. I thought, like, this is cool. You know, it's cool to drink Smithwick's. And that's what made me feel good. Not right. that I knew anything about it, but that beer had run out, so she just got a different beer. You know, if you know, Smithwick's is probably like 5% and Backwoods Bastard is probably like 10 or 11%. Right. And, but it's still served in a pint glass and it still looks like a brown beer. So yeah. I'm like, okay, that's fine, whatever. She's like, well, there was this. Fine. By the end of that meal, you know, I was probably twice as drunk as I meant to be. And I was just super excited about this beer, telling everybody at the table. And that was probably the first time we really had a craft beer in that sense. My wife worked at the Milwaukee Public Museum, and they have something called Food and Froth there, so she was allowed to volunteer. So we started to do that, and again, I kind of had my first beer, and I thought that was pretty cool. And Food and Froth at the time, it was full of all these craft breweries I'd never heard of, and every single one of them was serving up something so exciting and cool and local and fun to walk around with our friends who were kind of into this. And it was just a blast. It was like the best day of the year. I look forward to working at Food and Froth and still do. And it's still, I cherish it as my favorite beer festival for that reason. My personal reason, but I do believe objectively walking around in the public museum drinking is the coolest beer festival you could have, regardless of if it's personal or not. But you know, then I found myself sitting in the bedroom, thinking about the space, thinking about craft beer, thinking about design. You know, I come from a art background. So for me, it was really an exercise in design. I wanted to design a cool space. I wanted to build it. I wanted to do it. I wanted to find some reason. And craft beer just kind of happened to be there. And that was, you know, again, put all those things together with no good reason. I met with the distributor and said, here's kind of an idea. Like, you are the people we buy beer from, right? Like, say I was to open a bar, I would buy beer from you, right? Like, I have no idea how this works, you know? And he's had to kind of explain how the industry even works. Of course, some of the ideas were counter to the established notion of a bar. Again, I just thought that required you just doing what you want, but there were some hiccups there with, though, you can't just have the best beer in town and only that, you know. So there's some learning curves on both ends of the spectrum. You know, we opened the doors. I hired on Eric Gutbrod as the bar manager, as well as the person who orders all the beer. Because, again, I didn't come into this. I think a lot of people figured, like, this guy, boy, he must know a lot about beer. Really, I just explained to you what I knew. not much. But, again, I have my skills are more intuitive, and it's hard to put it in perspective. I have an art degree, but I don't want to say to anybody who's getting an art degree right now that that's going to help you in any way. So I like to give it credit, but it may not be responsible for any of this.
Well, I think undoubtedly it is, just because your sense of aesthetic, you know, is part of what, you know, the look, the feel of Jefton Vessel is definitely part of what makes it what it is. Even if it was by some sort of kind of innate guessing, you also knew how to run a business. You know, when you don't know everything about craft beer, you hire someone who does. You know, you start a craft beer bar, you hire someone who does. And I think that that's a miss sometimes on business owners' parts, where they say, oh, you know, I don't know how to do marketing, or I don't know how to do my finances, but, you know, we'll just wing this anyway, you know.
That's a constant learning process. Yep. Even to this day, is delegating. You know, I'm sure any business owner can tell you the challenges of delegating, because you kind of get up and started in any business, and this definitely goes for photography as well. To push yourself to be good at what you do requires, you know, this inner drive to own your output and to have, you know, some sort of control over your work, whether that be personal work with your hands or creative work with your mind or anything like that. And to understand when you grow, you have to delegate some of that. You can't do it all yourself. And that might mean that it's not going to be the way you want it, but that also might mean somebody can do it better than you. And you got to be ready to accept that fact. And the more you can start finding people that are good at the other things or better than you at things and adding them into your greater vision, you know, that's when you grow as a business owner. And that's a constant challenge for me.
Yeah. Well, and okay, so despite the fact that you don't like to necessarily think of yourself as a traditional bar,
it's fine to say it.
You are kind of in a group, you know, with other bars, you know, in the city, in terms of, you know, bars in general have gotten a little bit of heat, you know, during COVID-19. There's been a lot of there's been a lot of tossing of blame. You know, people are getting together in bars.
Yeah, I agree. There's been like these kind of scapegoat industries where it's just like, I can't believe we're allowing this to happen. And how would you feel? Do you feel, as someone inside the industry, like how much do you feel that is, I guess, true?
And frankly, I do. I do feel like that's true. And I don't understand necessarily anybody who tries to say, well, you know, because I'm in this industry or I need income or something, that somehow makes it morally more justified to endanger public health or something like that. Like, there is a real simple scientific discussion to be had, and that's always what I'm having in my mind, contrary to my own personal needs as a person, you know, with kids and income and mortgage payments and all of that stuff. And Lori mentioned, you know, you go into this business as somebody who wants to create a fun place to gather people together physically. You know, it's literally the skill set of a good bar, and therefore a good bar ownership is, you know, people who are good at bringing people together. Sometimes touching, often and always talking at each other, which is now, you know, borderline uncouth to talk in public. And months ago, you know, great bars were lauded for their ability to be good at this. And they're good at this, you know, because, you know, they either have a knack for it, have tried for a long time, have worked super hard at being good at it, have put tons of time and money and thought into being good at that. I don't think ever once did they say, I got to set aside some time to work on my infectious disease skills and stuff like that. Like, it literally never crossed their mind. So it simply isn't, you know, when you think of bartenders and what makes a great bartender, being good at infectious disease spread was never something I brought up with a bartender in an interview. So to find out that some bartenders may not be great at thinking about stuff like that makes a lot of sense, actually. So people shouldn't be surprised that they've been thrown into a place where they are now being asked to think about droplet spread from talking and, you know, how to control that. And it just has nothing to do with why the bar exists, why the bar is good, why the management is good, why the staff is good at their jobs. But now we're kind of asking to be good at, and if we're not, that's where now we get to, Matt, where you said, you know, there's sort of this judgment happening across the board. And I'm there because I'm, you know, just personally pretty self-critical about how I do anything. That drives a lot of my work in the past and current. It's just how I push myself forward. And I am, you know, I don't give myself a pass to do anything. I do feel like some bars, you know, it might be more political. I'm not really sure. You know, people who are intentionally flouting it and being like, well, screw that, we're going to gather a big bunch of people. It's mm-hmm. so intentional. It's not like, oh, we're not good at it. It's like, we're just mad that this is the rules and we're going to, you know, try to upset the cart or whatever. But, you know, for me, it's a constant battle in my mind. You know, is it even, are you doing society any good, your village, your community, your family, any good by being open? And, you know, sometimes fundamentally, you know, you look at somewhere like New Zealand and you're kind of like, come on, man, well, that could be us. We could have zero cases. Like, how do we get there? And if we shut down everything, period, we could get there. And if someone came up tomorrow and said, I'm shutting everything down that isn't really essential, not like quote unquote essential, you know, like bars, but, you know, totally essential. And within, you know, 3 months, there will be zero cases. I would be all on board. I don't see that ever happening. So even if I raised my hand and said, yeah, let's shut down because we want to quick get to that zero cases scenario, and nobody else was going to do it, then it's sort of pointless. I guess in a real sense, then I take that ideal, what's the, you know, quote, best thing to do, and balance that with what can I do. And I'm, you know, again, this work, it comes in that I'm quite lucky with the size of this place and the way it works. It's kind of a neighborhood place. It's very small. There's only one shift maybe where there's multiple bartenders if it's busy. But generally we have one staff member, so it's easy for our staff to stay safe. There's a couple things, and maybe we'll talk about these, that I think are smart moves that if all bars made, they don't have to shut down completely, but if they do them, they can really control their situation. And that's what we're doing here as much as we can. So, you know, a couple small things can go a long way. You can still stay open. We still make money. You know, we're not going bankrupt. We're not defaulting on a mortgage. We're not packing the place, though. And this probably just means we can continue on like this, but it means we're going to continue for a long time like this. We're not going to shut the virus down in a couple months by kind of staying half open. But maybe that's the best America can do.
Yeah, it's a little bit of it's been a frustrating lose-lose because, I mean, I love movie theaters and a lot of them had to open up because it was like, either we got to do something, like we're not getting support, and if we have to try to make some money if we intend to stay open like this. But you were talking about some of the small things that you were able to do personally beyond, you know, the kind of like COVID guideline kind of like ideas out there. What were some of those things that you were like, let's like kind of above and beyond COVID prevention things that you incorporated at Draft and Vessel?
Yeah. And I think this is the real crux of the conversation, that they aren't, you know, you kind of said above and beyond the COVID instructions. These really should be the COVID instructions, you know, so the conversation should be, okay, if bars are going to stay open, you know, let's talk about bars specifically, how they're designed, how they work, where are the vectors, you know, the spots where people interact or cross over these boundaries, where if you know anything about disease spread, you create a possible point of transmission, a vector, you know, and if you can control the vectors, you can control the spread. And in a bar, you know, it's not, you know, like the bar itself is the most dangerous situation in a infectious disease world. It's the best place to sit when you want to hang out with a bartender and drink.
Absolutely the best place, right.
If you don't want to get a airborne infectious disease spread between, you know, 18 people at a bar and one bartender or two bartenders, to me, having no seating at the bar, say you have 50 seats in a bar and 20 of them are at the bar, it doesn't just remove 20 out of 50 potential danger zones. It punches way above its weight class in that sense. If you were to remove seating at the bar, you may remove 90% of the vectors, or 95 even, you know. And same goes for outside. So if you, everybody knows, you know, we push our seating outside, that's good. If you have zero seating at the bar, that's really, that carries a ton of good when it comes to controlling spread. The other thing I think is a main one is the time of day. You know, we tend to not be a late, again, we're not your typical bar, so we don't even always stay open until bar time in that sense. And I do understand bars where they make their best sales late, this would be a tougher ask, but everybody knows, and this is probably where maybe that real consternation from the community comes from. Everybody knows people go to bars to drink alcohol. And frankly, the more you drink, you know, the more things happen at a bar that are harder hard to control.
Because your defenses go down, you know, and your normal capacity for making great decisions sort of eases away, you know.
With every drink. Yeah, and normally it has nothing to do with infectious disease. It just happens that right now it does. So people who come at 1 p.m. are probably less likely to make one of these decisions, whatever that might be, talking with your mask down or giving somebody a hug who you haven't seen, but maybe you shouldn't right now, compared to 1 a.m. It's just much more likely to happen. And, you know, it's a long day and people can adjust their behavior. So rather than saying, all right, bars are shut down, they're bad, they're full of people making the wrong decisions and nobody should be drinking anyway, it's not essential, so 100% shut down. Or, you know, open as usual, just try to be smart. Mm. It seems like you could say, all right, let's all close at 10 because cutting off that 10 to 2 a.m. zone, you might cut off, again, the vast majority of problematic situations. And if nobody can sit at the bar also, you're closing at 10 or say midnight, and you can't sit at the bar. Those two things, I think, would have a huge impact on the quote-unquote danger of bars in coronavirus.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and early on in this, kind of as conversations were going around, you know, there were far more radical suggestions. I would say, you know, that in some ways sounds, you know, reasonable. I mean, you're still being open. You're still servicing, giving the public some of what they want, just not at length at the same, you know, same hours. But I did hear, you know, some suggestions early on, like, well, why, if they're allowing bars to open, you know, why don't we have, you know, drink maximums? You know, like maybe everybody can come in, but you're limited to two drinks or three drinks, you know, while you're there, or some sort of something of that nature. And I, you know, you heard a lot of uproar from people that way. Oh, but people shouldn't tell me, you know, how much I can consume, you know.
Yeah, Americans definitely don't like being told what to do. And unfortunately, that's great for us when it comes to pop culture output and everything, but it's not good for us when it comes to following the rules from infectious disease experts. And, you know, maybe I wouldn't even trade it. I'd prefer Hollywood and American music and the boundaries and the lead America takes in those fields and have a tough time during pandemics. That might be a preferable situation. But It is the reality, you know, that Americans just aren't good at it because it's not in the toolkit of the things we're normally doing well worldwide.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because the other things that have come up, you know, I mean, the bar industry is, you know, the service industry in general has been hit by the pandemic, but bars in general, you know, there's a difference between a bar and a restaurant in terms of margin, you know, and I think a lot of people are like, no, you can't, you know, you can't limit things like hours or number of drinks because, you know, nobody will make any money. You know, the margins are too low. And, you know, I guess if you understand the industry, like bars make quite a bit of money, like the markup on that beer or wine, you know, other, in other places, cocktails that you're drinking is much higher than the markup on, let's say, food at a restaurant.
A lot higher.
You know, and people come to you expecting to drink. So while restaurants, you know, are struggling with, okay, we're making, you know, 15%, you know, maybe on this dish that you bought. Can we please get you to buy a bottle of wine with that so we actually make some money? You know, it's a little bit of a different situation for bars, you know.
It's really different, and you'll see many restaurants, many restaurants that are trying to open during this, and friends of mine, even here on Oakland, to open and maintain your staff and overhead with strictly to-go food sales without being able to add a drink or two or three to every one of those meals. That's not the business. The business is meant to include that high-margin beverage option to make everything work financially. So, you know, to have a curbside at a restaurant is one thing, but if they can't make you a drink and hand it to you on the curbside, you're taking a huge chunk of that margin out of that sale. You know, for us, again, if we have people here, it's this, you know, it's the same as it is either way. So, and we're lucky enough to be able to sell some things to go, and a lot of bars are doing to go as well. And some restaurants are adding to go options. But again, that's just simply not the model. It was never meant to be a food only place without the opportunity to have drinks. And maybe that's another of the options that I had mentioned. You know, I would love to have sort of a industry discussion about quote-unquote COVID rules and how they apply to bars and restaurants. And the time of night would be part of it. Sitting at the bar would be part of it, but also giving more options to them for delivering alcohol, you know, making mixed drinks and letting you give them to people curbside, even if it, you know, cops are like, well, they're going to be drinking in the car on the way home. But again, yeah, that's a safety situation. But here we all are. Well, the only reason we're talking about this at all is because it's a safety situation. You know, we're considering if it's even safe to go to a bar at all. So I'm not advocating, you know, to allow people to drink and drive. I'm just advocating to open up the restrictions on alcohol delivery a little bit to allow people to continue their behaviors without, you know, forcing everybody to, because people are going to resist, like you said, otherwise there's going to be resistance. And that's another thing I haven't heard. You know, Illinois is open. You know, here's the thing. Illinois allows alcohol delivery, or at least Chicago does. Minneapolis has restricted seating at the actual bar. In any bar and restaurant, you can't sit at the bar. So it's already been done on both sides of us. You know, here's Wisconsin, behind again, which is just, it's not like this is a crazy idea. We're the only ones not doing it.
Well, it's been, go ahead.
No, please, Laurie, I insist.
No, I was going to say that I would chalk that up in part, you know, I mean, because Wisconsin has a very, very strong affinity for bars and bar culture. And admittedly, sometimes in an unhealthy way, but also a great pride, you know, a great pride in that. And I think it becomes harder, more difficult for people to envision, you know, the world without their corner tavern. you know, and that has made different, as far as, you know, we can place blame as far as like what things have been allowed or not allowed. Like, I would love to see delivery here. I think delivery of cocktails, for instance, cocktails, beer, wine, would help a lot of businesses. You know, we can look at kind of who the players are in that field, you know, and we have folks like the Tavern League who I don't think want to see that happen. For reasons of their own.
No, they haven't been very active in getting creative here because creativity has simply never been in their toolkit. And this is a good time for creative people to be creative. And the few cities and villages or whatever that have kind of reached out and said, hey, anybody have any good creative ideas? We need creative thinkers right now. That's awesome because everybody likes to say unprecedented and all the time. They just love to say it all the time. But usually unprecedented means this hasn't been done. So people who can think of new ideas are going to be voices we need to hear. So it's one thing to say unprecedented times, but if it's not followed by, okay, this is what Americans are actually good at. Let's hear how to operate real quick with some really quick ideas that we can execute in 6 months or, you know, we can do for 6 months and come up with in 2 weeks. You know, that those creative ideas are going to be the best asset. And I guess, you know, what I was saying is a lot of the people in charge of stuff like this have never been creative. And in fact, their job seems mostly to keep things status quo and always hold back any sort of new and creative version of whatever was there before. And that's unfortunate, you know, because like you said, if you could make cocktails for delivery, you know, it's not the conversation about binge drinking in Wisconsin isn't the conversation we're having right now. Like, sure, let's have that someday, but it literally is not the conversation if that's good or bad right now.
Right.
People they drink what they drink and they're going to continue to do that through the pandemic. And we're not talking about how much you should drink right now. We're just talking about how do you drink and not spread infectious disease. And, you know, if you allow somebody to make a cocktail and deliver it, what you're really doing is giving the customer a chance to support that business. And people, well, can't they just make their own cocktails at home? Well, yeah, of course they can. And they do. And what they're doing is going to grocery stores, which is great. There's huge package sales happening at grocery stores and liquor stores, and good for everybody and all the breweries and everybody who are finding ways to get their product into people's hands through those venues. And they are, you know, some breweries are up over any year they've ever had in off-premise sales because everybody is buying so much of their packaged stuff. You know, you can't even get a canning person to come by your brewery because they're all booked up. Everybody is booked the mobile canners because every brewery is trying to find a way to get their beer into packages, not in kegs, and get it onto shelves so people can drink it at home. But, you know, say a small restaurant doesn't have, you know, they're not a brewery. They can't can everything. They may not even have growlers. Like, we have this sort of growler setup that was pre-existing that has come to be really helpful for us. In fact, we were originally designed to be a growler bar, period. Like, you were supposed to come and get a growler and go and maybe have a glass. But now, of course, we're a place where you drink and maybe you get a growler very rarely. But that has been a big asset during this whole time. And a lot of our customers have used that to support us. You know, it's very clear they could get a 4-pack or 6-pack of something cheaper elsewhere, but they know if they don't support us somehow, when it all comes around to the other side, maybe we won't be here when they do feel safe. So they want to come here, maybe spend a couple extra bucks and help us get through. And again, like a small restaurant that can't do growlers or can anything or whatever, but that alcohol sale is part and parcel of their business model, and you allow them to make cocktails, which they do really well, and then deliver them, the customers now have a way to really support them, you know, intentionally. Because you could say, well, you know, maybe come by and just give us some cash or a handout. Nobody wants that. Nobody really wants to ask for that. Nobody wants to start a GoFundMe or anything for themselves. They want to do what they're good at. They want to make good food. And, you know, they want to employ their bartenders who make good drinks. And if you just allowed them to make the drinks and sell them with the meals or something, customers would be like, oh, great. Now I can give you this extra bunch of money. I can have my drink. This will help you make it through. I know it will. And, you know, they end up consuming the same amount of alcohol they would if they went and got it from a big chain grocery store.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think where this falls apart is if people aren't realizing what that model entails. Because there are, you know, there are places, you know, that are selling like bottled cocktails right now, or cocktail kits. And a lot of questions came up early on to me, like, well, why would I buy that? You know, or a bottle of wine, or, you know, a growler of beer from a restaurant, or, you know, and my response was, oh, because that's really, really what makes a difference for them. You know, I mean, you think taking carry out from a bar makes a difference because, you know, and that's easy because all the bar, you know, has, you know, beer, wine, cocktails. But doing that for a restaurant, you're like, it's the same general idea, you know, and COVID has been about like a keeping people safe from a health and disease control perspective, supporting businesses. And then for owners, like this is bringing up all sorts of moral and ethical issues, which is, I think really what we're talking about here is it's like, how do you keep a business going? You know, how do you let people support you, and make a living, you know, knowing that every moment you're open, you know, there's a risk, you know, nothing is risk-free at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, people go, oh, wow, that's, I don't want to add that extra thing onto my meal. And I guess people simply, and how would they? They're not going to necessarily know how the profit margins work for a restaurant to stay in business. Obviously, it's hard work. You're seeing multiple restaurants close during this time, from small places to really big national places to really well-established local places that have been here forever, you know? So nobody is immune to it because it simply isn't, you know, a extremely profitable business where, you know, you can handle anything. And the customer just, to your point, they don't know that. They don't necessarily know that. I wouldn't have known that. I barely know how restaurants work.
Why would you know that? Right?
Why would you know that? So, and again, unless the restaurant owner just says, well, we're going to double the price of all our food because that's simply what we have to do, because otherwise we're going to close. They don't. They still want to provide something at kind of the same price, and hopefully maybe you'll tip a little extra and that will help keep the staff around, you know. And it's impossible because people aren't going to know the information they need to know to understand why restaurants need X, Y, and Z to stay open during the, quote, unprecedented time. You know, again, that just means none of us know how to do this. And it's one thing if you're a consumer during an unprecedented time, that's just kind of fun almost. Like, oh, I get to find a new way to consume. You know, it's really hard for me. Now I got to go over here and consume over here, or now I consume stuff online, or, you know, it's just a choice and maybe it's a pain or maybe it isn't, or maybe it's an adventure, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's fine. It's just not actually hard, you know, whereas being a business owner in a unprecedented time is literally the difference between your business closing through no fault of your own. You know, like 6 months ago, you may have had the best model with the best food and the best staff in the world. And now through nothing you did, it's going to fall apart. And that isn't fun or interesting or cool. It sucks.
No, that's, I get frustrated when I follow movie industry stuff and they talk about, like, you know, everyone just wants all the movies that are getting postponed on streaming. They're just like, ah, why isn't this movie, just put it on streaming. And I'm just like, it's really nice for us because, like, ooh, we get to stay home and watch all these big new movies at home now. This pandemic's great. But it's just like, there's entire industries that are going to fall. Like, the movie theaters may not survive this, just straight up. The movie studios will not make the money back that they invested into these giant movies. So they're going to lose money. So for the consumer, it's so easy to be like, oh, this is great. Like, I get to order out and get pickup takeout. And, you know, I get to try new restaurants under the guise of helping local business. And, you know, I get new movies and new music whenever I want it. And it's just like, it's easy for us to say as consumers, but for the people actually having to like figure out how they're going to pay bills and things of that nature, this is not fun goofing around. These are not fun changes in a lot of ways. These are changes that are survival.
Yeah. And something I've heard a few times is some frustration from people saying, you know, why don't businesses have a rainy day fund? You know, people always say, you know, in financial planning, or whatever, from a personal point of view, everybody should have a rainy day fund. You should have some money just in case of a disaster or a problem or whatever. Why aren't businesses expected to be the same? And of course, you know, I don't think they realize that the people in the businesses are also people, you know, so the rainy day fund is literally ours as actual people, just like yours, you know, the business.
Right.
I mean, yeah, sure. If we're talking Walmart or Amazon, I don't know. I can't speak to that at all, but it's not like as a business, you also have this business entity that has a rainy day fund. And you as a person who is, you know, one of the few people who make money from the business, you have this whole other rainy day fund because, you know, you're supposed to have that as a person, because the same thing is happening to you as a consumer as well. You know, you're also a consumer of all sorts of things and suffering all the issues there that might require rainy day funds. And like we just mentioned, small restaurant and bar ownership to some degree isn't a massively profitable industry. You know, they're sort of run on a somewhat short leash. You see them appear and disappear all the time because, you know, scrappy couple people can start a cool bar and restaurant and get it running. As long as people are there, you're up and running. But it's unlikely you have an MBA and years of business plans and huge bank accounts to support unknown, you know, unprecedented pandemics. You just had an idea and you're doing it and it's great and everybody's loving it. And you're often, you know, like me, I'm spinning out into at least one other location right now. Pretty quickly, you know, within a couple of years, if you're doing well, you try and at least maybe the more ambitious, creative people, plenty of bars are happy being the corner bar for 30 years, but other places do start to look for ways to grow this idea as they can see that you know, you kind of strike while your creative iron is hot, and it's not like you saved up for 10 years before doing that. You kind of get to it right away. So no, there's no money. There's no backup fund. You're spending all of that on pushing the idea forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like, I mean, it's a very similar model to, like, you know, a creative business owner who wants to kind of keep moving and keep moving forward and doing something new. You know, I mean, it's like real estate development. You know, you do up a property, you sell it, you take that money, you invest in the next property. You know, maybe there's some money on the sidelines, but I know a few developers at least who are like, well, all my money right now is tied up, you know, in properties. And, you know, I have to sell things, you know, to kind of make this move forward.
Yeah, definitely. Again, not a skill that was supposed to be there in the beginning, because I sat down with a lot of banks. You know, I've gotten some loans from banks and they put you through the ringer to fill out and you know, comb over every part of your life to give you a penny. And never once are they like, let's see what you're going to do in a unprecedented time. Like, it's so unprecedented that even the people who are in charge of funding you never even asked if you were prepared for it. In the future, that's probably going to be a new line item on the loan application from a bank. Like, well, we need to see, like any bar and restaurant, they're going to be like, we need to see you can operate for 6 months with no income just in case there's a pandemic. Like, good luck, because you can barely get through that application process, even when you're showing all you have, like everything is on the table, and like, well, I don't know, you know, no, I don't. You haven't been open somewhere else for 2 years, then forget it. You know, it is really hard to get the trust of the people with the financing before this. And I hesitate to think it will be possible at all in the future.
Yeah. Speaking of the future, obviously, we talked about it a little bit at the start of the episode, but obviously, you know, the fall and winter are coming up, and that's the kind of big, scary monster. Because, I mean, people have been able to adjust with the summer. We've been seeing patios and parklets and some really interesting pivots from some from bars. But obviously,
And it's been a savior in some ways.
It has, like patios, but you know. Do you think it's viable for places to, like, I was talking with some people, it's just, you know, I wonder if corner bars are going to open up, you know, outdoor bars for, you know, the Packer season and stuff like that, and put up some heaters and hope that people are willing to survive the cold. Is that remotely viable, or what is the solution coming up in this, you know, very frightening future?
Yeah. As hard as it is to talk about all the things we're, you know, challenged with right now, it's nothing compared to 2 months from now. That is the real conversation. And when the rubber really hits the road, because then, you know, even me, it's literally, every time we talk about it, we're still not there yet. We still say, is it going to be better to just close? Just forget it, you know, because it's so fraught with problems being inside as we get more understanding of how this virus works and how it's all about the air, and we understand how HVAC systems work and distance and you know, droplets versus aerosol spread. All those things are, again, the devil in the details once you go inside. And parklets and outside and beer gardens and patios, they're more than, you know, like a good thing. They're the thing, you know. Without that, even though cases are going up anyway, so maybe they don't help at all, but they do feel like it's at least better than being inside, you know. And we have, just the other day on Wednesday, I think I took a picture, because we had like 25 people here, and we have our tables all spaced out outside. We had zero people inside. No, so not a single person was in the building, yet we were still serving 25 people, which is great. That's really perfectly fine for us. Come October, November, that's going to be literally impossible. So do you shut down? Do you say you can reserve the place? Here's a few of the options, you know, I've been thinking about. So you can shut down entirely, just go back to go. That's a really reasonable option, you know, and maybe the safest, maybe the most moral, you know, the most community-minded, and still, again, allow your customers to support you somehow by saying you guys can come and buy beer to go or something. Or you know, on the other end would be kind of opening up as a spaced situation. So you kind of find your size, you say, here's where your table's going to be, here's your spaced situation. But again, I still think nobody at the bar, that only gets worse. So you got no one at the bar, you got however many tables with a few people, but then you got this HVAC system, which just cycles the air through the building over and over and over again. And now the 6 feet, you know, 6 feet is when we're talking about droplets. If we're talking about aerosol, I think it's 37 feet or 27, something like that. So if you have 27 feet for aerosol and you got an HVAC system, well, then forget it. The whole building is basically live at that point.
It's full of whatever germs someone brought in.
Full of whatever. Exactly. Yeah. So now your staff, everybody in there, it's all, you know, it just doesn't mean anything. Might as well have a million people in there, because the spacing isn't even going to be feasible. Somewhere in the middle might be like reservation systems, where maybe reserve your time here or there, or maybe the whole place is only reservation, so X amount of people can take it each day, or maybe you have 3 reservations a day, and you know, you got 2 hours and 2 hours and 2 hours, and you can kind of wipe it down, and then you know anybody who's coming in there is already a part of a group, which obviously people have kind of found their groups, and they're already with them. It's just less likely that you're crossing over vectors like crazy with a normal night at a bar and people from who knows where. You know, like shifts, basically they could come through in shifts. That's reasonable. And maybe you could limit it to sizes in that case. Again, this is a lot of what we're thinking about. We're a certain size. We're not a giant place. I see people jockeying for ways to get quote unquote certified to have full capacity. You know, I don't know what that means. That seems, again, if we're talking about outside and everything, that's great. If you have a UV light sanitizer on your HVAC system, like if you want to talk about some real technological solutions, that mm-hmm. is one, you know, and if you can find a way to certify that and sterilize every cubic foot of air that goes in the return duct of your HVAC system instantaneously, that's a game changer. Like, can we get these?
Right.
And then you can space out. In that case, bigger places are actually kind of good things, because now you got tables that can be farther apart, and you can trust that the airflow isn't going to just, negate any of that.
Yeah.
As I had mentioned.
Yeah, but small places and old buildings pose all sorts of different issues.
Yeah, and I haven't heard, like I said, I would love to have a real science-based discussion on these strategies within this specific industry, because people are always like, well, grocery stores can do this, and they'll bring up grocery stores. And I'm like, man, bars and grocery stores, they're not the same situation. Nobody goes to a grocery store to socialize or watch the Packers or meet up or, although nowadays people do go there to get drunk, but generally not necessarily. You go there to get food to bring home and cook. And, that is quote unquote essential. But that usually means there are thousands of people who go into a grocery store every day. And that's a whole own world of problems that are better, but also worse in a way. We don't have thousands of people a day. Maybe we don't have food that prevents you from starving, so maybe we're not as necessary, but we don't have thousands of people crossing over. So it would be great to have what are some real solutions that we can do as bars? And then if somebody's like, yeah, let's try and group by, UV filters for the HVAC system, or let's all agree, nobody at the bar, period. And we're all agreeing to it, or we're all going to close at midnight at the latest, period. Mm-hmm. Something like that. And then everybody sort of execute that without it having to be a law from a politician. Mm-hmm. I think that would really go a long way to show that bars are finding a middle ground, and then maybe there wouldn't be as much anger from either side.
Yeah. No, I mean, that would be awesome. everybody kind of working together to find solutions that make the most sense. That's optimistic, though, in terms, I think, of how, differences in opinion about how places, want to operate. You kind of talked about how, the ideal circumstance might be to close everything down between, November and February. Is everyone going to cheer? Some places might be like, okay, yeah, that feels good to us. It's the best way to keep everybody safe. And then there's going to be a whole bunch of other people going, no, we're definitely not going to go for that. Don't you think? I mean, the division, I think, in the industry and the division of opinion makes a difference in terms of how far reaching that could go.
Yeah. And again, I do not think that is both in a typical American's toolkit. It's not usually one of their best skills, is just taking orders. And it's also not even in creative bar owners' skill sets either. Usually, you're not even thinking about opening a bar unless you aren't looking for a 9-to-5 office job or something. You tend to follow your own lead, and getting all those people to agree outside of someone being in charge and laying down the law. And then you go statewide and things just completely fall apart the farther you get away. I do feel like Milwaukee, and I'm sure Madison, there is a community there, and I've spent some time on the MKERIRC group calls, and just heard nothing but really great collaboration and great ideas, and very supportive, thoughtful, owners. And
yes.
Is that everyone? I don't know. It's everybody I've talked to. So to me, it kind of feels like everyone. And, you know, we're a pretty progressive city willing to do what's best. And Madison as well. Outside of Madison, you know, I grew up in the country and I've been out to that town. And there's two local bars in that town. And at least one I know changed nothing. Didn't shut down for a second. It's 100% no change. And I think for a while it was like, see, why did we have to? No problems. But now this thing is hitting rural Wisconsin harder. You know, obviously like no surprise there. And it's going to tear through little places like this, like nothing, because they are taking zero precautions.
Right,
and as it starts, they aren't going to be like, oh, we were wrong. They're just, it's just going to blow through like wildfire.
There was like a sad macabre thought I had when the statewide mask mandate came out that I was like, you know, I was totally working under the assumption that it was going to go to court the next day and that it wouldn't survive. And it seems as though they're letting it stand for now because I think they know that it's political suicide to take masks to court. But there was a part of me that's like, if they do that, at least Milwaukee will be fine. Like, at least Milwaukee has a mask mandate that Milwaukee is being smart about and Madison does.
Yeah.
But, like, that's a really shitty way to look at the world, honestly, to be like, well, at least you don't like to have that mentality of, like, well, at least my part of the state will be being safe. Like,
it's all levels. And, you know, we run a truck down at the Milwaukee Public Market as sort of a seasonal pop-up location. And last year it was awesome because there's so many tourists down there who come to Milwaukee. Milwaukee Public Market's kind of a focal point. And more often than not, the person you're talking to is not from Milwaukee, which is awesome because all they're talking about is how great Milwaukee is. You just get to hear somebody walk up and talk about how great Milwaukee is over and over and over and feel really good about it. And, you know, this year it's like, oh man, what's going to happen? No festivals, no this, no that. But, you know, I've been down there working the truck a number of times myself and just shocked at how often somebody comes up and they ask me some question about Milwaukee. So right away I go, oh, you're not from around here? No, we're here from Florida. You know, we're here from Texas. And I've heard Florida and Texas multiple times. And this was at the peak, you know, just a month ago of Florida and Texas. And I was like, what the hell are you doing here? Like, why are you in our state? Who let you leave your state? What, you're just hanging out and coming to the Milwaukee Public Market? And I was shocked, you know. So the fact people are still bopping around the country just means, you know, even if Milwaukee's like, don't worry, we are going to work hard on this, it's like, that hardly matters. You got people who in the state who don't care, all over the country who don't care, and they're coming to all the other spots who do care. So,
Well, we predicted this at the beginning of this when people were like, oh, well, maybe we'll list parts of the country as, you know, this part of the country will have, it'll be like a red rating and they're like, and they'll have their certain, you know, restrictions. But this part of the country, if they're doing well, then they won't have restrictions. And it's just like, well, that's a really good way to turn infected, non-infected areas into infected areas. Cause if you live in a place that's red that has bar restrictions, well, then those people are just going to go where there aren't the restrictions. That's just how human beings work. It's just such ill-advised thinking throughout this whole thing. And it doesn't have to be this painful. You're looking across the globe. And even now you're seeing like some countries being like, oh, we're getting an uptick. We're getting a spike. And their version of an uptick or a spike is like 100 cases a day or 200 cases a day, maybe. Mm-hmm. Whereas in America, we're like 1,000 a day per state. Like we're doing, like I would love to have Germany's version of a spike. Like it seems great. Like it doesn't have to be this hard. And that's what's so frustrating right now is we're killing off industries for no good reason.
I have four kids that go to school just behind me here. And, you know, I've been on some of these phone calls about school openings and it's almost like the same, but worse because at the end of the day, we can shut down all the bars, honestly. Like, yeah, they'll be complaining, but whatever. We'll all live. Right. Shutting down the schools for every age from like kindergarten to high school. Ugh. Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal conversation. And it's just as split with just as many thoughtful opinions on either side, with disgruntled and unhappy citizens and residents and children and health concerns. It's impossible.
Yeah. This is, I mean, you know, you talk about unprecedented times and like operating with, you know, unprecedented ideas, you know, and the creativity is, you know, hopefully has got to be our way out of this. And in some circumstances, you know, you look at schools, you look at kind of moving into the future, and there needs to be, you know, a new plan.
Speaking of new things, though, you mentioned you are hoping to open a new, there is a new bar in the works, correct?
Yeah. This is kind of the
light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully.
No. I was going to say more like the perfect, I'm thinking of the word confluence. Confluence. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. The confluence of these conversations, kind of being creative, doing new things, you know, trying to be a part of what the best Milwaukee has to offer in terms of the industry I'm in. You know, you try to be a proud part of that. And of course, 2020 is a punch in the gut, because with DNC and everything, you were really looking forward to having everybody just love Milwaukee and being able to be a part, however small, of what Milwaukee has to offer. So that's just sad on a citywide scale. I think that's going to be the lasting pain. But, you know, the other side of it is this, you know, the danger moral argument of being open with a bar, and that's kind of what's happening for us in Tulsa right now. This has been a long project, because again, we can't just pop open chain locations. It's, you know, been thought out. People have been asking, we've been working on it. It's gone through a number of iterations, from an old house to a two-story building to a one-story building, and you know, we're taking our time. It's very much a hands-on thing for me. So it's not just like hired some people to build us a bar. It's a lot of thought, a lot of design, a lot of, you know, me personally, my time and ideas, and coming together into this in a very slow, painstaking process, with the end result hopefully being something cool. Because, you know, we don't want to move from a bar that people think is cool to a bar they think is not as cool. You know, we want it to feel as good. That making that, you know, I see with the Spaceballs shirt, you'll understand the Empire Strikes Back reference. You know, we want it to be our Empire Strikes Back. It's got to be at least better than the first one, because it's so easy to make a bad sequel where everybody shows up and says, yeah, this doesn't have the magic of that first one. I don't know what it was. I sure loved that first one, and this is not it. And, you know, we're so reluctant to follow up what was sort of a cool, fresh, unique spin with something not as good. So anyway, it's just taken an immense amount of effort, again, driven by that fear of failure to be good. And the timing is just going to finally work out that, you know, we would probably be able to open in November, you know, late October, November. And, you know, that's just like we were talking, all the patios shut down. We all go inside now. Yeah. Is it even good to be open? Oh, by the way, grand opening, you know, for all the people who have been waiting.
It's the perfect time to open a bar.
200 people. Yeah, and in a normal world, we would be building that up like crazy. We would be taking reservations for that opening day, and we would want to sell the heck out of everything in that building to start making some money back against this massive investment to open the place, you know. And that opening day would be big for a lot of reasons. And now we're literally thinking, how do we not have an opening? How do we keep people away from seeing this thing that many people have been kind of excited, and us have been excited, to show people? How do we undo it all? It seems impossible. Yeah. It seems like the only option is to not open and wait.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. At which point, you know, how much money can you bleed, you know, over a new project? You know, how long can that last, you know, before it's the project that never can be, you know?
It's too late for that. It either opens or we go bankrupt, because it is not the cheap simple elbow grease operation that this place was. You know, it turns out a new building is just outrageously expensive in these times, with commercial construction just happens to be very high. Materials are very high right now, everything from steel to gravel, you know, concrete.
Yeah, because you started building like in during a building boom, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, you know, huge. We have the whole supply and demand issues coming at you, and the building boom that was, you know, and taking a step back, like you initially were on target to break ground in July with this, correct? And that was pushed off
a year ago. Yeah.
Yeah,
July 2019.
And that was pushed off to January.
Yeah.
And
due to the bank, by the way, I don't want to take it out on the bank, but like I was saying, the amount of challenges people may not think about, you know, just in terms of like financing and small business owners, you know, going up against, not up against, but working with banks who do want to work with you. But it isn't a simple little thing. You know, it is a brutal process for somebody who is used to working, you know, kind of arm's length, literally their arm's length to their project, to have to go through a bank to finance a building, you know.
Right. Yeah. So crazy times.
Indeed. That's the takeaway from our hour and 10 minute conversation so far. Our takeaway is weird times. Bizarre times.
Unprecedented, if I may say so myself.
Indeed.
Well, I'm ready for precedented times.
I'm
ready for something to happen, and people are like, oh yeah, this has happened before. We know how to handle
after
this.
I can't wait for that. It's all precedented, right? Unless,
one would
hope. I guess a large meteor, that would be unprecedented times again.
I mean, hopefully we could talk to a dinosaur about that and be like, hey, quick question. Talk to some cockroaches and be like, hey, what do you guys do?
Yeah, we won't be able to use that excuse next time.
Yeah, unless like the murder hornets show up again, and it's going to be like, unprecedented bugs.
There'll be something else probably, but
yeah.
Indeed.
Great.
Indeed.
Well, in the meantime, where can people find Draft and Vessel, and where can people, you know, support you?
Yeah, so we're still open, and I do try and make the case here that we're doing this to the best of our abilities. Again, our bar is closed here. The vast majority of people, if not some days, all the people are outside with tables that are spaced at least 6 feet apart. We're not a big bar, so it's never very busy. I wouldn't do it if I didn't feel comfortable with how we're handling this. Our employees get tested. There's only ever one of them here. So I do feel personally like we're being responsible about being in control of the vectors in our space, which is why I feel not horribly guilty about being open and providing a product that isn't absolutely essential. We're also open at the little truck outside the public market Thursday through Sunday, and that's a truck that sits outside in the open air with one person standing in front of it. So again,
it's like a little urban beer garden.
Yeah, it's a little beer garden patio. There's obviously a lot of other businesses happening there at the market, but you know, we are a separate thing with one person and no bar at all. So again, a pretty safe spot. We do growlers to go of everything here. With our tap list is online, Untapped, our website, or anywhere else where you can kind of follow it there and even make decisions. You know, you can know what you want before you even walk in. Walk in with a mask. You can still do taste or something if you need to, but you can grab a growler to go here. So we got those two options going. It would be nice to have an outdoor spot in Tulsa where we're really taking advantage of that, but unfortunately, that's not going to happen. You know, we got merchandise and stuff on the website if people want to buy t-shirts and give. We got a lot of gift cards. People buying gift cards to be supportive, which is cool.
Yeah. An advantage for you is that your stuff is cool looking, you know.
We need more stuff. You know. Unfortunately, we really just made like a few things, and we're just kind of that's all we have. But we got to sit down and crank out like some beanies and other other stuff. We got a shirt and a hoodie. Although it's becoming hoodie weather, so that's a good idea.
It is. You know.
Yeah. Good plug. Right. This is a good plug. Yes.
Well, Foodie Weather.
You know.
Oh. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I say, you know, go out there, support small businesses, and everybody. I don't. The point of this, I think, was to have this conversation about, you know, being thoughtful about safety and livelihoods, and kind of the intersection of, you know, this crazy, you know, disease that nobody asked for, and the way, you know, that we all should try to behave. So hopefully, you know, I guess my hope is that people take some wisdom from it and think about it a little, and then go back to the world maybe with a different perspective than they would have had before.
Yeah, I always try, and this goes for any discussion or argument or anything, that when I try and think about it personally, I try to humanize the other side, you know, and I would encourage anybody to kind of humanize bar situations, you know, other than just saying they're bars and that's that. You know, they're run by people just like people who run grocery stores or other, you know, dry cleaners and everything else. And there's a certain set of skills that makes you good at owning a bar. And that has nothing to do, like you just said, with something they didn't ask for. So if they're not really good at running a bar in a pandemic, you know, it kind of makes sense. You can humanize that and understand why that might be. Obviously, I do think some bars are being downright intentionally irresponsible for political reasons. And I just have no place for that behavior where it's like, I'm going to make a statement about my beliefs and here's how I'm going to do it by gathering a bunch of people and having no masks or something like that. Like that stuff is just making it bad for all the rest of us who are just simply trying to operate this business that has nothing to do with infectious disease. But outside of those people, you know, understand that people are trying to find a balance to not go bankrupt or close and try and get on unemployment or start a GoFundMe and, you know, expect that customers are going to somehow pay all the bills. They're trying to find a way to continue doing their business, which they've worked real hard on existing in the first place, and trying to be safe about it. And, you know, they don't really deserve super harsh judgment because, again, they're just like any business, trying to run stuff like they did before. And if everybody, like I said, even if people really want to get together and talk about it, that'd be great to find solutions that everyone can kind of agree on, from the customers to the owners to the politicians to the scientists. Man, that'd be a dream come true if everybody was able to collaborate across the board like that.
That would be awesome. But
cooperation,
you know,
you've gone too far now.
You figure our world would function on so many levels so much better.
Yeah, but who wants, you know, a functioning if society? That's ridiculous. Yeah, yeah.
Never been to New Zealand, but I am totally looking at it right now, being like, "Woo!"
They are the lone winner of this pandemic. New Zealand stock has gone way up.
They won the unprecedented time competition.
They did.
Unprecedented championships.
Right.
They did. Now nobody go there and spoil it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm sure New Zealand's like, and everyone needs to stay out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But thank you so much. This was an excellent conversation. Learned a lot of great perspective. And we hope for you the best right now. The best that things can be right now.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate it.
So yes. Thank you for your everyday internal struggles, so that we can, you know, have a conversation like this. So
yeah, and I encourage anybody to you know, talk about it truthfully. And I think, again, like I said, there's a lot of super generalizing that is easy to do, especially with social media, and don't get me started on that. But it's much easier to truly think of the people that are all real people, and, you know, you don't have to be really right or, you know, some percentage of right. Just you can be honest, and, you know, people need money to live. People also care about their communities. People do want to drink alcohol. None of it is a sin or anything. It's just the way we all are, and acknowledging the way things are and trying to find the best way to continue being, you know, humans in Milwaukee, is nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you
sure
again.
Thank you.
A perfect note to end on.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What a conversation. That was why I didn't expect to. I mean, I expected to learn a lot about COVID and what it's like for bars. I didn't expect to learn about naming trends. That's very cool. I'm genuinely really interested in that.
Yeah. I love all the conversations that I've ever had with Nat, because I find him to be a really thoughtful, interesting, kind of creative person. And his take on this has been so thoughtful and community-oriented and has brought in so many elements that some of which I had never thought of before, really, about being a business owner during these times. So I hope everybody enjoys it as much as I feel they should.
Yeah, if that absolutely makes sense. Absolutely. Well, we, obviously no sparkling water second, because we don't do that during COVID. But we still do food porn, because we love reading good writing about good food. And sometimes good writing about bad food. But Lori, what are we reading in sultry tones today?
Yeah. So I'm bringing in a poem, and the interesting thing for this, so I got a couple of new book. This one's called The Hungry Ear, Poems of Food and Drink, and it's edited by Kevin Young. I bought this used copy of it a while back and started looking through it for this, and the piece that I have for today talks about beer, which is why I guess it's appropriate to today. It's a poem called Fun, and it's by a poet named Wynn Cooper. And the interesting thing about it is that it seems to be really tied in to a Sheryl Crow song. And I don't know if Sheryl Crow read this poem. It's the fun, the one about all I want to do is have a little fun before I die.
Okay. Well, that I was hoping it was Soak Up the Sun, so I'm tuning out now.
So
I think it's All I Want to Do is Have Some Fun.
Yes.
I think that is the title.
But he talks about, you know, a beer buzz. And so I don't know if she read this poem and the song was inspired by the poem, or if he wrote this kind of inspired by that song or the gist of it. But I'm going to read, and I'm going to kind of start kind of in the middle and read a portion of it to the end, because I think that it captures something about bars, you know, and
yeah.
You know, well, fun, something we don't have enough of right
you,
now.
I will let you have it, Lori. I will sit here and wonder in awe.
Fun by Wynn Cooper. I like a good beer buzz early in the day. And Billy likes to peel the labels from his bottles of Bud and shred them on the bar. Then he lights every match in an oversized pack, letting each one burn down to his thick fingers before blowing and cursing them out. A happy couple enters the bar, dangerously close to one another, like this is a motel. But they clean up their act when we give them a look. One quick beer and they're out, down the road and in the next state for all I care, smiling like idiots. We cover sports and politics, and once, when Billy burns his thumb and lets out a yelp, the bartender looks up from his want ads. Otherwise, the bar is ours. The day and the night and the car wash too, and the matches and the buds and the clean and dirty cars and the sun and the moon and every motel on this highway is ours. You hear? And we've got plans. So relax. And let us in. All we want to do is have a little fun.
And the sun comes up on the side of the hill. I did not know the lyrics. Probably could have looked them up. Didn't bother.
Right. But, you know, yeah. I don't know. Wynn Cooper.
You know what that makes me want to listen to now? You know what song that makes me want to listen to? I'm Like a Bird by Nelly Furtado. Anyways, so Lori, where can people find the Food Crush podcast?
And then that makes me want to say that every time I hear her name, I think it should be Furtado.
Nelly Furtado.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, the Nelly food the food parody version of the music industry. We've got Nelly Furtado.
There's a Nelly Furtado.
Which now yes, I'm very indeed. Hungry. So. I yet again did not eat anything before this podcast. So, Lori, where can people find the Food Crush podcast?
Oh, you can find it everywhere that podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social. We are at Food Crush Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and
places.
Facebook. That place, you know, that sometimes I want to forget about. I sort of want to forget about these days, but
yeah
you can find us there.
Where can people find Matt? You?
Where can people find you?
I beat you to the question, Lori. Where can people find you?
All right. You can find me everywhere at Low Frederick. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And I talk about food all the time. So, Nelly Furtado, please join me there.
Yeah, Nelly Furtado, be a guest on the pod. And you can find me at A Man About Film on Facebook, on Twitter, and technically on Instagram. I was almost tempted to post a photo of Charlie this weekend, my dog, but then I was too lazy, and so the photo is just on my phone for me to enjoy. And for no one else.
So y'all can look forward to it eventually being on Instagram, I hope.
Yeah, you know. At some point.
All right.
Well, thank you, Lori. Thank you for an awesome conversation. And as always, everybody, keep cooking and keep masking.